Hey, welcome to episode 94 of the Hockey Free For All podcast. I am your host, Steven Stiles. And again, like every other episode, just never a shortage of things to discuss. I want to start with Martin St. Louis' unexpected sudden departure for family reasons, just because it's going to have not only a huge impact on him individually, but also the team as well. I wish him absolutely the best. From what I understand, one of his sons was involved in some kind of accident, so hopefully everything works out absolutely fantastically well, and wish him nothing but the best and his entire family. Regarding the effect on the team, though, for all those that were worried about Montreal maybe not finishing in the bottom five of the league, that could have a major impact on that desire for people, because he is really the lifeblood of the team. He knows how to motivate players. He knows how to put talent together and combinations of lines, who can feed off each other and things like that. So it's going to be interesting to see if Trevor Letowski has similar abilities. Hopefully he does, but at the same time, if people have been wanting Montreal to just like lose an incredible amount of games, they are 5-15 roughly in their last 20 games, which is not good if you want to make the playoffs. The next thing I'd like to jump on is the constant comparisons of current players to a game's best, meaning you have Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Gordie Howe. They're always going to be the best of this league. There's just not going to be anybody that will usurp them, if you will, or replace them. There might be people that get added to it, but when somebody goes, oh, this person's going to be the next Mario Lemieux or Wayne Gretzky, stop with the ridiculous comparisons and anointments. Connor McDavid has been the most likely of recent players to generate that type of excitement and join that elite group of players. Everybody's already ready to do that with Connor Bedard. The kid is 18 years old. The kid is in his rookie season. The kid is playing on a team that has absolutely no talent around him at all. And he's still roughly on a point per game season. That being said, Connor McDavid and another current player that I'm going to get into that people are making outrageous claims about, Austin Matthews, are not Mario Lemieux. They're not Wayne Gretzky. They're not Gordie Howe. What separates Lemieux, Gretzky, and Gordie Howe from the rest is anybody that you put with them on a line was instantly capable of being a player that their statistics or abilities never, never indicated they could be. Not only do they make their own team better when the moment they step on the ice, but no matter who you put with them, and again, great example of that, Dave Semenko on the left wing with Wayne Gretzky. Nobody ever accused Dave Semenko, wow, here's almost a point per game player. This guy's amazing. He's the complete package. He's the power forward. Everybody knew Dave Semenko, and I'm not taking anything away from him. I think Dave Semenko was a great player. Loved watching him play. He was a hard nose, in your face, leave nothing on the ice, impact my player in a way I don't approve of, I'm going to impact a player of yours or your team that same way. And I admire players like that. But let's stop with the comparisons. Oh, Connor Bedard's going to break everybody's record. He's going to blow right by Connor McDavid. He's going to be better than Wayne Gretzky. No, he's not. Stop with that kind of stuff. And moving on to Austin Matthews, everybody's like, oh my God, he's going to break Wayne Gretzky's scoring record. He's a long, long way from that happening. He's in a season where he will eclipse or equal 60 goals for the second time in his career. Does anybody remember how many goals per season Wayne Gretzky scored? He made 70 look easy, consistently. And if you think about where the top goal scorers in the league history are, you have Gretzky, you have Ovechkin, you have Gordie Howe, the top three, rounding out the top five, Jaromír Jágr, Brett Hall. At number eight, and I picked that because of how far away Austin Matthews is from even 700, let alone Gretzky's record or Ovechkin, okay? Number eight is Mike Gardner, an absolutely underrated, unappreciated, quite successful player, sits at number eight on most goals scored in league history at 708 goals. At the very earliest, when Austin Matthews reaches 650, then we can start talking about him and the possibility of passing some of the number eight, number seven, number six, maybe getting into the top five. 5, maybe. But let's take it easy in the meantime and just appreciate their games and talents. But this constant anointment to greatness or comparison, I don't understand, especially long before it's even remotely going to happen, if it's going to happen. Now, moving into the 2023-2024 trade deadline that thankfully is passed, Montreal, of course, traded Jake Allen. And with the ending of the three goaltender situation in Montreal, you would think everything would be great. Everybody be happy that that bothered for whatever reason that it did and was this like critical thing that couldn't continue on. Now, apparently, that you have Sam Montembeau and Caden Primo in goal, everything seems to be set. They're both younger. They both now can play more games. They now have a more consistent idea of when they're playing and things like that. Now everybody wants to jump on Caden Primo. Oh, you know, we don't know anything about him. I mean, we're going to question him and doubt him and critique him. Really? He has shown tremendous growth this year. He has been the best goaltender in the best four games that Montreal has played this year. That being Anaheim, Detroit, Buffalo, and Columbus. Those are the four best games. Two of those, by the way, were shutouts by him. He's, the only goaltender to have a goals against under three goals against. Yeah, right now it sits at 2.97. It was at 2.83 or a little lower for a while. So again, let's give the guy an ability to blossom. What is this garbage of critiquing people long before they've had a chance to settle in, play their game, be undisrupted by just hellacious garbage, whether it be from media, fans, whoever it is? Let them play this game. And equally, while we're talking about goaltending for the Montreal Canadiens, people can stop about, oh yeah, well, you know, Sam Montembeau, he's earned unquestionably. There is no doubt in my mind that he is the number one goaltender for the Montreal Canadiens. Not really. He too has stability in his game, but also has a lot of growth to do. He's not looked that great lately. He's let in a lot of soft goals. He's let in a lot of tips. Now, when players are in front of you and you don't even see it, yeah, obviously you can't blame a goaltender for that. But there's been a lot of low pucks on the ice that have gotten by him lately. His game needs a little tweaking. And now they have the opportunity to do that. My question about these two players and many others is, why are so many people either dying to or already and waiting to anoint before actual abilities, skill sets, consistency, and greatness have truly either been at least shown consistently or demonstrated consistently and achieved? That's why there are so few in anything. I mean, we're talking about sports, but it applies across the board. That's why there's so few that are truly the great ones, the amazing talent, the upper echelon, whatever that title is. That's what sets Gretzky, Lemieux, Howe, Jordan, Brady. There's not a lot of people. That's what makes them the best at what they do. And another hockey player that I'd throw in there, if you want the ultimate team guy, all in willpower to literally will his team to win like he did in 1994 with the New York Rangers, you got to throw Mark Messier in there too. Now, a topic that I want to get into is the officiating and the just outright horrendous officiating in every sport at every level. Just in case anybody missed it when Montreal played the Vancouver Canucks, how was it possible that there was no call on Vancouver player Teddy Bluger, who elbowed, not just kinda, not just didn't realize, or any of one of those other things, like, oh, I didn't realize where my elbow was going. Yeah, okay, that's a valid excuse. But literally blatantly elbowed Caden Gooley with a direct shot to his face. How is that possible that that call was missed? I mean, you literally better be blind. You better be the Ray Charles of referees. That is insane. It's irrelevant what teams are playing and who the players are. Thereby, this is not a favoritism comment of a, oh, well, you're a Montreal fan, you're just upset that Caden Gooley got hit. No, that is unallowable or intolerable behavior for any player of any team. And often, the sad part about it is, the player retaliating gets a penalty and the original one doesn't. Not that that happened in this case, but that's a very common response to it. But that player, and I say that player, Teddy Bluger, should have had a game misconduct, should have been viewed as intent to injure endanger another player, which would have made it premeditated behavior. And the response by the league should have been a 10-game suspension. And everybody's like, 10 games? Well, let's be honest. If you look at the inconsistency of suspensions just by themselves handed out this year, everybody knows there's a major problem in the league disciplinary offices, that they are clueless and have no idea. So before anybody says, oh, 10 games is too harsh, what if it happened to a player of yours? A player that you did like? Not even the star player on your team, just a player on your team. You would be calling for the max to be thrown at that player. Because someone has a favorite player or team does not make them all in on everything being called their way. Doesn't work that way. It's completely unacceptable. Your favorite players and teams are irrelevant. It's inappropriate, unprofessional, conduct unbecoming, and the cherry on top is it's intentionally injuring a player. And that in itself should have a much greater meaning than anything else. These are all supposedly your friends, your co-workers, your fellow union buddies in the player union and things like that, and you care that little about them to have that kind of behavior? Really? That is exactly the type of garbage player and officiating that needs to be eliminated. Not only to restore ethics and integrity to the game, but interest in the game. Because officiating is a major problem in all professional sports, and there's apparently a lot of people that are sitting there going, I don't understand why fans are walking away from our game. Really? Pathetic officiating like that? Which, by the way, is having an effect that it should never, ever have. And that's on game outcomes. Poor officiating is deciding games. That's a problem, in addition to the injuries that they're not calling. Moving on from that particular issue regarding a player's health, let's talk about Joshua Roy. What a great story. What a outstanding addition and transition that almost seems seamless from junior to the AHL to the NHL. That's been awesome. For some reason, people are like completely up in arms with the recent injury that he suffered, which will now have him out 4 to 6 weeks to his hand by taking a shot to it. Anybody remember Brendan Gallagher? I mean, if you're worried about or that up in arms about Joshua Roy's head, you had to just lose your mind over the multiple times and actual fractures and breaks that have made Brendan Gallagher's hands look like a pretzel, basically. You know, I get it. He's young. He's a rookie. Everybody's excited about him. Yeah, it sucks. But, you know, let's keep some balance here as far as that wasn't an intentional thing. That was a shot blocking, wrong place, wrong time, that kind of thing. And I'm not minimizing the hand injury to Joshua Roy, but, you know, let's keep a little perspective here, because there were people that's like the world was ending type response. You're like, wow, too bad that response isn't for everybody. Will he be back in Montreal this year? Not likely. Will he be available to Laval? Not likely until the playoffs, and if they make the playoffs, which they're currently in a big push attempting to do. The great news about Joshua Roy is with the seamless transition that I spoke about from and to the various leagues, he should set himself up or has set himself up to be absolutely a top nine core player in Montreal in 2024-2025. And arguably top six, the question is where? And maybe the perfect situation for him, because he looked in his last Junior World Cup so good with Connor Bedard, maybe he ends up being the right wing on the Suzuki Caulfield line. Because once Kirby Dach's back, and I know a lot of people, it's like, oh my God, but Slokowski has looked great on Suzuki's line. He did, and he has, and he's improved constantly. But he looked even better in the beginning of the year with Dach and Newhook. Maybe he becomes Joshua Roy, Nick Suzuki, and Cole Caulfield, Alex Newhook, Kirby Dach, Juraj Slafkovský. Not a bad top six at all for next year. That should be extremely entertaining to watch. Now, continuing on with talent or prospects coming into the Montreal lineup. Oh, we've got to see David Reinbacher and Lane Hutson in Montreal this year. Not really. There's actually no reason. Montreal is not going to make the playoffs. That's clear. Lane Hutson and David Reinbacher just finished very, very busy seasons in the respective teams. Or on their respective team. As much as everybody wants to see him, how about taking it slow? And how about letting them come to Laval? In David Reinbacher's case, he's been signed. To be determined with Lane Hutson, whether he comes or not. He may just go as far as he can, and after that, may end up just returning to the NCAA next year. He's had two great seasons, but also being prepared the best way possible, physically as well as mentally, pays off in the NHL. You don't want him to get hurt and have his career prematurely ended. That'd drive people out of their minds. So let's take the slow road, if you will, with these players. If they both come to Laval, let them have some time in the AHL, not necessarily to adjust, but to bring themselves along in a way that has great benefits to very long, successful careers. I realize that sounds pragmatic, that sounds unexciting, but it's also the best for the players, which means it's the best for the organization, which in the overall, is going to make the fans the happiest because it puts them in the best position to see their team win more often. Not just regular season games, but in the playoffs and championships. They have a better chance. Both players, though, are extremely talented. Undoubtedly, like everybody else, have some work to do in their games. Has some physical strength, some expectations, everything to get on board with and to meet before they get in the NHL, so they're not suddenly blindsided. And like so many other prospects, which so many people have said didn't seem ready, seemed out of place, didn't seem like the right pick. You want to move on from that, right? Then let's change the way players are brought to the NHL. Very successful organizations have had more of a long-term process than just, all right, let's see what you got. Most players don't do well with that. There's an adjustment time. Do both players possess enough raw skill right now to be helpful to the team or maybe even be an upgrade? Sure, but wouldn't you rather them come in and not have a couple of great games, look totally lost, cost the team radical penalties and power plays, and have consistency to their game? Wouldn't that work out better for the players, better for the team, and the success of the team, and the happiness of the fans? The idea of a Logan Mailou, Caden Gooley, David Reinbacher, Lane Hudson, Jaden Struble, and Arbor Jacki is a very exciting top six. That has a great mix and a different element from every player. Everything from striking fear into their opponents because of offensive abilities, transition game, and if you want to play it rough, we can play it that way too. It's a very skilled top six, but you have abilities right now or options to allow those players to grow properly so that when they get to the league, they just hit the ice, lit on fire, and go. Now, unfortunately, after mentioning that top six, like we've talked about in previous episodes, where does that leave Mike Matheson, David Savard, Jonathan Kovacevic, Jordan Harris, Adam Engstrom? Like I've always said, there's a lot of talent. But one thing that I'm really hearing a lot of is, oh, Montreal can trade a lot of that for another top six player. Like I talked about with Joshua Roy, Nick Suzuki, Cole Caulfield, Alex Newhook, Kirby Dach, and Yaroslav Slavkovsky. And you've even got Sean Farrell on the left, Owen Beckett center, and Philip Massar on the right wing. Your top nine is taken. What is this offensive elite talent that everybody thinks Montreal needs to go after by trading away tremendous defensive depth, which is the first time they've had it in decades? Why just trade that away? And what are you trading it for? Though the 2024 draft is probably not going to have that much offensive talent and has a lot of defensive talent, maybe Montreal either trades out of 2024 and into another draft with its picks. Maybe Montreal packages a whole bunch and moves up for one specific player. They can afford to do that right now. But that's the options that rationality, common sense, and logic, which fortunately Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon seem to be ruled by or make their decisions based on. And that is overall better than anything for that organization, for the success everybody wants to see it return to and have in the future. On that note, thanks for tuning in to episode 94 of the Hockey Free For All podcast. I'm your host, Steven Stiles. Have a great week.